VOCM presents Nightline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now your host, Jonathan Richler.
Come all you good people, I'll sing you a song about the poor people, how they get along. Jonathan Richler, the man legend, is away tonight. I don't even know if I'm allowed to do it, but you know what? I'm going to do it. There's a pop-up at the Wedgwood Cafe on Elizabeth Avenue. I'm totally giving him the shout-out right now. If you got a hankering for a smoked meat sandwich, and I'm not talking any smoked meat sandwich, I'm talking about some serious Richler brisket, head on down there and grab a sandwich. And bring one for me, too. Will you drop one off up to the station if you could be so kind? It is Thursday, February 8th. Daryl Power is in the chair, and Patrick Myler is my partner in crime on the other side of the glass. Patrick, how you doing? I can't see him. No, he's not. He's gone. Well, he's usually on the other side of the glass. How are you doing? My God, the week's flying by, and there's all kinds of news. Whatever you want to talk about. Of course, that disturbing story today about that Yahoo Toronto landscaper. It looks like they're finding the bodies of six people now, body parts, buried in flower boxes and backyards, and oh, God. It's disturbing. I hate the story. I'm disturbing you guys now. Apologize for that. But it is a disturbing story. The Olympics, they're coming. Crazy. They can't even squeeze it into 10 days anymore because, I mean, the mixed doubles curling started 2 days ago or something. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I like the Winter Olympics. I really do. Probably because Canada usually has a better chance in the Winter Olympics than the summer. But I've been looking forward to it, and I'm sure a lot of you listeners out there, too, are as well. Now, they all did sign the code of conduct, but didn't one Canadian player get wrapped on the knuckles already? Or saying something a little nasty to their Russian coach over there. I can imagine how to do something about drug doping and a doping scandal. And he was chastised. But, so, who can be on perfect conduct all the time, hey? And the great story, too, about the Norwegian team. I love the little stories about the Olympics that are so much fun. That ordered the eggs, that ordered 1,500 eggs and ended up with 15,000. That's a lot of eggs, people. That's a lot of eggs. It was a news conference extraordinaire day. The federal government this week, basically, much like what's going on in the States, Trump has spent, you know, a solid year, just taking apart all the bricks that Obama built. And this week, the government, the federal government, has been really doing the same thing. Sticking it to the former conservative Harper-led government by reversing decisions. We've heard the announcement from Dominic LeBlanc, the fisheries announcement just the other day, which has some very good news in it for fishermen and independent harvesters. Patty was on with Patty Daly, the man legend, with Dwan Street. Had a great conversation with Patty this morning about she sounded hopeful. Of course, Ryan Cleary is not hopeful. He said there was no mention of adjacency. That's his issue. And but something's got to give with, with these independent fishermen who are like fishing, have basically lost their licenses, lost control of their own destiny, and are fishing at the whims of others. And I really hope nothing but good things come out of this, and I really hope it's a jolt of energy to a lot of the small communities in the province that really survive, live and die by the fishery. Of course, environmental news today, sweeping changes, as Melissa Jenkins has just pointed out. Now, Seamus O'Regan, I'm telling you right now, I had to go into the newsroom and ask, did he say it? And I just heard it on the 8 o'clock news. The last crowd shagged it up. Boys, oh boys, that is a very funny line. And I was wondering, you know, did he just say that off the cuff, or did that line actually go through a vetting process in the inner circle of the PMO to see, can he just casually flop that out there, or does that have to be approved? Anyway, it's Stick It to Harper Week. So we don't know It is good news. The National Energy Board, Trudeau's dad's old friend, the ones that the West still throw darts at, the Pierre Elliott Trudeau dart board, because of the National Energy Board and the policies out there. It looks like good news. It looks like things are going to be a little bit more open and transparent. There it is, the open and transparent phrase that we love to use so well. It looks like it's going to be a lot more public input and engagement in future projects. A little bit different here in Newfoundland. Charlene Johnson, as you also just heard on the news, is not quite sure of... delineation of roles. Is one going to be stepping on the other's toes? Are they going to? It looks like they're going to be working together, but it is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You want to talk about it? You are more than welcome to do it here. Listen, the guy who got busted for the 62 pounds of marijuana, I got a little word of advice, but you might as well just smuggle in 49 and keep your bag under the weight. Because if you're going with 62 and all of a sudden you're into oversized baggage, that takes its own track, you know? You got any comments on that? Why not, Bart? We'll talk about that too. We'll talk about that too. Where are we going? There was another article. I think this is in 5 o'clock news, and I thought it was interesting about the... lovely, let's talk a little bit about Newfoundlanders and their health. This is just some jaw-dropping statistics that we are the higher percentage of seniors in the country with three or more chronic conditions. Wow. 48% of seniors in Newfoundland on at least five medications. That is... I'm glad I'm walking a bit more. Which is hard to do in the winter, but you got to force yourself to do it. Yesterday was a fantastic day to do it. Today, not so much. Yesterday, I ended up going up through Bannerman Park, and the loop is alive and well out there. I still haven't laced them up this year, but I got to lace them up sooner rather than later. The Chess Crosby story, I will say, you know, I mean, Chess has been taken quietly collecting votes, by the way. For a long time. And this sweet potato wedge fry recipe, it's humanizing, because that is the image that he really needs to get to people. That people say, you know, people might say he's dry, etc. You know, you've heard all the opinions of him. You probably heard a lot on either one of these talk shows. But as a human being, likes to cook, likes to eat. I thought it was a pretty cute story. Hey, Patrick, why don't we just take that call? Right? There's a call up. I got lots more to talk about, but I got 2 hours to do it. So I haven't seen the recipe, but I'm curious. But right now, we're going to talk to Bay Roberts Mayor Philip Wood. He is on the line right now. I don't know if we're going to talk about sweet potato fries, but he's welcome to. Mayor Wood, how are you this evening?
Oh, not too bad, Daryl. I can tell you one thing. If you're waiting for me to cook some sweet potato fries, you're going to have to wait for a little bit. I'd say your best hope is for Jonathan to drop you off a smoked meat sandwich. Now, no disrespect.
Who can afford sweet potatoes anyway?
Well, I don't know, but I don't know. Even if I had them, I don't know how I could cook them. I got to be quite honest, right? But there you go. There's one of my faults.
High heat.
Is that I'm not a great cook.
You definitely got to hit them at high heat.
But there, okay, well, there you go. Put them in the oven is probably, you were also talking about health, probably safest if you can cook something in the oven.
Yes.
Or cook them in the oven.
How about you? Do you know your way around a deep fryer?
Yeah, but I'm going to be quite honest with you. I've slacked off on the deep fryer. I think everybody sort of in their younger days would rely on the deep fryer. And, of course, I shouldn't mention it on the television show or on the radio here, but, of course, it's a bit later at night. I can remember with some kind of horror now, of course, listening or putting your pot of fat on the stove. Thank God we've moved away from that, because
yep.
That was a dangerous, dangerous practice when you look back. Right?
Everybody did it too. My God, the chip pot that everybody had, the grease left in it, the bottom of it black.
Oh, I know. And not only me, I'll blame my poor old mother, too. She used to have it, too, right? You know, I think, as I say, it came up through the generations with some type of progress, I guess. But at least we progress now right out of it. And I certainly, there are so many safe, I'll stress it, there are so many safe different types of fryers and that on the market today. Do not go cooking on the stove. That's one thing that I will say.
Absolutely. You know, I did buy a little one of those safer deep fryers, but I never use it. I got an active fry, and I tell you, you can cook anything in it. But we are totally way off topic, Mayor Wood. What is on your mind? It doesn't involve food. I'm making myself hungry.
Actually, I'm not a little bit off of topic there. What I was going to talk to you about, and that is fire protection in unincorporated areas. Mm. But I'd like to probably put a couple of plugs in there for the town with some big events that are on the go, that both of which I think are a great economic boost for the town of Bay Roberts and also the entire area. And on May 23rd, May 27th is our annual Song, Stages, and Seafood Festival. I don't know, Daryl, if you've ever been out to it.
No, I haven't.
Jonathan has been out. It's a very, very popular event, and I'm happy to say that tickets, they don't last very long. So if anybody is interested in our seafood festival coming up at the end of May, visit bayroberts.com, and I'm sure you'll find something that you'll find interesting and enjoy. And the second big event is, and I know VOCM covered a little bit, and I think that our recreation director, Ian Flynn, was on the show a couple of nights ago, and that's a big Light the Lamp street hockey tournament. We're hoping for maybe up to 1,500 young ball hockey players, and that's coming up on June the 23rd and 24th. And as I say, it's going to be a big tournament. It's a big thing. I think the hotels and B&Bs are selling out their rooms pretty quickly. And again, if anybody is interested in that, by all means, go to bayroberts.com and you'll find out. And that's coming up on June 23rd and June 24th.
How long has that been going on?
Well, this is our first year.
This
is our inaugural season.
Yep.
There was a big one in St. John's, and that folded this year. So our volunteers and our recreation director, he jumped on it right away, and registration opened up yesterday, and it's primarily for 15 under, I believe, and
yep.
It's a girls and boys division. So, as I say, it's, you know, we're anticipating a big crowd. We're hoping for the kind of weather we had yesterday, maybe a little bit warmer, but I heard you talk about walking, and it was a great day yesterday, and we're hoping in June it's right after school or just before school closes, so most people are still around. Being a former teacher, I get mixed up sometimes in the closing, but I think this year it's a late closing, I believe, towards mm-hmm. the end of June. But that's the weekend, June 23rd and 24th. So a month before that, of course, is our Giant Song, Stages, and Seafood Festival. A couple of nice events that I can throw in there.
Well, it keeps the town going, you know? It becomes tradition, and residents of the town can mark their calendars, and it gives a chance for other people to come and experience Bay Roberts, which is... I mean, I spend a bit of time out around Brigga, so I spend a lot of time in Bay Roberts and up there. It's a booming town.
Well, these two events, of course, you know, yes, they're being held in Bay Roberts, and yes, Bay Roberts should get an economic boost. But when you have these big events, of course, the entire area gets a boost, and people take part, and they have food and meals at restaurants. They buy chips and drinks at convenience stores. They buy some other types of drinking refreshments around, and of course the hotels are already. That's a couple of big events coming up very early in the season. So, and it's not only restricted or confined to the town. All along, like I say, Burgess has some nice restaurants up that way now too. So I'm sure that there's a bit of spin-off for everyone, and we're very fortunate that we've got a great group that supports it, and we also have lots of great volunteers that we're very, very proud of. And of course, there's always the staff, the town staff, who take sort of a lead in this. And Ron Delaney looks after and does a fantastic job with the Song, Stages, and Seafood Festival. And Ian Flynn right now is on track to run off our first Light the Lamp street hockey tournament, which I'm sure, due to Ian's dedication, will also be a great success. But some good stuff coming up, and we certainly encourage all. But last week, we had a CBN joint council meeting, and I'm certainly glad to see the way that this has evolved over the years, where you have representatives from all the town councils, right from Victoria to Brigus, attend, and we discussed many different topics. On the agenda this past week was Eastern Health was in, talking about the services that Carbonear Hospital provide for the area, and I must say it was a great presentation. It was great to see the one of the other initiatives that they have on the go is also in promoting doctors in rural Newfoundland coming to the area, GPs, because this is something I'm telling you I'm sure all towns are experiencing sometime, because you have still have lots of people saying they can't get access to a family doctor. So I'm glad to see that the Carbonear Hospital and their doctors and staff are being proactive in this and promoting this area, and also, of course, the hospital due to the services. And I think to a degree we're getting the people, but we also need, of course, doctors, among others, to also be a part of the community, because one of the big things in Bay Roberts that is being built in recent years are these single unit departments. They're becoming very popular with seniors. Another topic on the agenda was fire protection, and fire protection being provided for the unincorporated areas. And this is another big item on the agenda of M&L lately, and talking, and of course in government, because the premiers, there's been the premiers formed the past couple of years, and many times you hear it when there's a fire in an unincorporated area. And of course, the incorporated areas provide fire protection, and but one of the issues is that a lot of times the people don't pony up in the unincorporated areas.
Cash on the barrelhead talks, you know?
Well, you know, it costs the towns who provide the service money. It takes their firefighters down to other communities or out in the cabins or lines. And one of the things that was discussed, of course, the Eastern Regional Services Board now has recently been incorporated, and of course they provide municipal services such as waste management services. They collect the garbage up in many communities. They're also looking at regional water and wastewater systems, which is a very sensible idea.
And they got pretty good at collecting money themselves.
Well, they do, because when their mandate and their was when they were established, their mandate and their legislation, it just simply has teeth to it, and it also has a much more legal authority versus today's system, which is many times just the honor system. And by getting their foot in the door with the garbage collection, of course, they also have an up-to-date list. Because, for example, we cover an area here next to the town of Bay Roberts, and we don't know who moves in or who moves out, because, of course, different privacy things. And, of course, we, you know, it'll be a very time-consuming product or effort to go down and knock on every single door and say, do you live here? And then a month later, somebody else moves in, and, you know, and that kind of stuff. So the Eastern Regional Services Board, as I say, they've already started as of January 1 providing fire protection and emergency services in the Salmonair Line area, such as Deer Park, and I think up around where the old prison camp was, and down around where the Wilds is, and that kind of stuff. And we're hoping soon the towns that provide these services to unincorporated areas, that we're hoping soon that they also give us that same kind of service, and that's our plea. And I know we've been at it for a while, and at the last joint council meeting, as I say, we're writing a letter to see where the progress is, because, as I say, when they were established, they have the legislation to back up their words, saying that you have to pay. And of course, the objective is that everybody that receives a service should be paying it, because we hear all these services or all these announcements and predictions that we're going to be in for difficult times. And of course, the same difficult times are going to be experienced by town councils throughout this province. And I think it's everybody's right or obligation to pay their fair share, as opposed to putting the burden just on the towns. So, you know, and after saying that, for the most part, a lot of people pay up and do their tasks. But there's always, in our particular case, looking at the statistics today, there's approximately 25% of homes that don't pay anything. And that's simply not fair.
It is not fair. I got to go to the first break. And it's really not fair that, fire, something as important as fire protection needs to be, people who are in incorporated towns pay for it, and people who are not in incorporated towns need to pony up because their houses are on the line, and these fire trucks are coming, leaving their towns where there might actually be a fire at the same time. Look, God forbid, there could be two, and you'd be pulled out of your town to an unincorporated area when there's a fire burn in your own town. Thanks, Mayor Wood.
Well, we do provide a backup service to our own communities. I don't want to frighten our own residents, but we do have there is a plan in place.
Yep.
But at the same time, it does take away firefighters and equipment, sure. And most people know who they are, so we're asking to pay up your bills.
Pay your bills. You said it here. Thanks, Mr. Wood. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Take
all the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right up to the first break. Back in a flash.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. Yeah. This is Nightline on VOCM.
You're listening to VOCM's Nightline. VOCM's Nightline is brought to you by Cowan's Optical. Cowan's Optical, where the focus is on you.
We are back. Just got a caller. I don't know if you've been tuning in to Jonathan. You should, because Jonathan does a fantastic job in the evenings. There was a bit of talk this week about ALC and Kitchen Bingo and one person who seems to be winning continuously. Someone just called in to say Kitchen Bingo has been shut down. That's the kind of breaking news, folks, that we are responsible for on VOCM Open Line. And I tell you what else I'm really glad to be responsible for. To talk to one of my favorite people in the province. I haven't spoke to her. I gotta wish her a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Marjorie is on the line. Marjorie, how are you?
Not bad. If I wasn't so angry, I wouldn't be feeling too bad. I listened to Seamus already, and I heard you mention his name.
Yes.
He's coming down here, sneaking in the back door so he can rob us going out the front door. I don't know who he's working for. It's not Newfoundland. He must be helping Trudeau, see how much they can give to Quebec.
So when he said the last crowd shagged it up, that sort of, the hairs stood up the back of your neck today.
Yes, because listen, I take your dirt shagging it up there. We got an agreement there now that Newfoundland got control over, but now they want the federal government. So any time they decide that Quebec needs a little bit more help, God knows they don't help in Quebec, and give it, they have to give them everything now. I don't know how much more we give them. We won't have a fisheries, and maybe now they want our, this looks like they want to get in on our oil, so take that, because you know they got no way of getting in things, so they'd rob all the other provinces, they'd rob. And Trudeau now got everything shagged up by West, but he never says nothing. He never said nothing about how they wouldn't let Newfoundland go to Quebec to do work, but it's all right to let the other crowd come to British Columbia. So it makes you angry, you know.
My God, Marjorie, I thought you were going to be softer than that tonight. You are fired up.
Yes, I mean, I can't believe it. He comes down here a month or so ago with a little bit of money, and he thinks we're brain dead now by that. It frightens us today. So they'll see now. They'll give us enough dough so we close our eyes, and we'll be robbed blind. They'd even take the teeth out of your head to give to Quebec if they get away with it. So he's not our friend. I don't know why we elect him, because he must be Trudeau's friend. He's certainly not the friend of the people that elect him, especially the people in rural Newfoundland, where they got everything to lose with the fisheries and everything. And they got and Pierre Miquelin out there ready to jump in. So we don't know where we're going to be gangbanged on.
You never voted for Seamus. You weren't a Seamus fan even during the election, though, were you?
No, I never voted for anybody because I couldn't vote for Harper. I wouldn't vote for him if I died. Yes, I voted for Ryan Kerry. And by the way, I'm listening to Ryan. If we never had the FFAW, now that's another crowd we've seen on at it. I mean, they're making out they're right good and they're doing everything and all the federal government is helping with everything. And Ryan Kerry is saying it's not so. And I believe Ryan Kerry before I believe anybody else because Ryan is out to help people. That's what he can do for himself. And there's not too many of them around.
Duan Street was pretty hopeful this morning on the Lima Paddy. I don't know if you caught that.
You know, no. I try not to listen. But when you hear something, and we got the Nightline or any other line, if we never had VOCM, we wouldn't be able to say anything. So I'm just making the fool for talk. But I hope you'll get... Charlene Johnson said something. Now, I do trust Charlene Johnson. And she was there, and she was one of the PC crowd.
Yep.
And you could talk to behind the scenes, and you knew she cared about Newfoundland. So I hope she'll keep watch, I think, because we need some of the watchovers. God only knows.
Yeah, she's... it's a great... position for her, a great posting for her, and I'm sure she is definitely reading into the details of this agreement and see what the future is going to be looking like. What else is on your mind, Marjorie?
At this time, she wants to give Mr. Bartlett, he writes letters in the paper, sometimes he called the law. Thank God that we got someone like him. He's watching over us, and he's even angry about what's going on. Now we're getting robbed, blood. You know, it's awful what's going on.
That's Wilford Bartlett, I guess, is
yes,
it?
Yes, yep. I don't know. He writes letters in the paper, but I'm trying to read all that and see what's on the go, but I'm not too up on it, but I get so angry I forget about it. But if you bring it to Nightline and you get it across and people will get their ears open, that they won't get away with it.
Yep.
You know, because there's we're between a rock and a hard place. We have no one to vote for. You can't vote for the PCs. You can't vote for that fellow with the turban on his head, you know?
No. Jagmeet Singh is... Jagmeet Singh, Marjorie, you settle down there now. You settle down. Jagmeet Singh is a great man, and I pegged him to win as soon as he entered. I said, this is the guy who's going to pull this out.
Sorry, I got nothing against him. I don't care what I said that for the only way to bring you, because I didn't know I didn't remember his name. That's how much I thought about him. But I don't think he's any good for us. He might be good for other people, but we want someone that's going to be good for us to bring something down to us. But anyway, I hope to God, Chess Crosby, to get in for the leader of the PCs, and with him and a few other things on the go, you know, I suppose we'll get something,
Did you get the recipe for sweet potato fries yourself?
I don't want sweet potato fries or any other fries, but I hope the people that can speak better about it and do something about it. Thank you for listening to me. And I hope other people will be listening. And I hope they watch what's going on, because there'll be no Newfoundland. We'll be all Quebec alone, everything on this side of Quebec, and we'll have nothing, you know. And then we got the bank up there. He don't care about us. He's only looking after New Brunswick. So, you know, we don't stand in a prayer. We don't. It's ridiculous what's going on.
Marjorie, always a pleasure.
All right, thank you. But anyway, I get you. You just make you angry, and thank you, and I'll be listening.
We'll see. We'll talk again, Marjorie.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Marjorie. We're going to go to another quick one before the break now. Joan is on the line. Hi, Joan. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. And you?
Doing very well. What's on your mind this evening?
Yes, I got a problem with the social workers. I had an appointment for Go St. John's,
mm-hmm.
and the social worker won't give me transportation to go to St. John's for having my surgery.
And how long in advance did you ask?
Pardon me?
How long in advance did you ask for this ride?
Well, ever since last week.
Yep.
And they want to help me.
Now, is it a long drive?
Yes.
So, you got to figure out another way to get in.
Yeah.
So, did you ask some family or friends? What can you do?
No. I got a sister up in Toronto, but, you know, it's only me and Steamboat.
Oh, yeah. So, that's a fine drive.
Yeah, and I can have a job walk, and I'm going back and forth to the hospital, and apparently they's not doing nothing for me up there. And last week I went up to the hospital. I had the shower, and when I got out of the shower, I was losing that much blood.
Wow.
Yes, and so I went up to the hospital, and they never done nothing for me.
How are you going to get in? Do you have any idea how you're going to get in now? Is it a procedure you're coming in for?
I got the 77-pound hernia.
Did you say 77 pound?
Yes. And I got a hard job to walk, and did not help me.
Boys, oh boys, oh boys. So
yeah.
When do you need to come in?
Well, they phoned me and they must be come down to St. John's.
Yeah, but when? What's the date?
I believe it's this week.
This week?
They must be, yes. I got a hard job and walking.
Well, listen, Joan, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to put the word out over the airways. Now, if there's anyone in Stephenville who's heading to St. John's this week, call into Patrick. Give him a call. What's the number, Patrick? I never remember the number here. Shocking.
Yeah.
Brace. 273-5211. That's the number. Call in, and we'll get you Joan's number, and we'll see if we can't get Joan a ride to St. John's.
Yes.
Okay.
Guess soon I get down there, better I like it. Guess I'm getting sick with this and everything, and my legs is swollen, everything.
My.
Guess I'm carrying too much the weight on me.
Yep. And how long have you had this hernia?
Oh, my good God, a long time.
I'd say. It was that big.
Oh, my Lord. Yep.
That's constant pain.
Yes. I ain't in the pain. And I'm living by myself and nobody around me. And, like I said, something got me done to me, I guess.
Yeah. Listen, so that's it. I'll put the word out. Someone can get Joan a ride from Stephenville to St. John's this week. Call Patrick, and we'll see if we can't do something for you. Thanks for this, Joan. I wish you all the best in the future. I hope your surgery goes well, and you're doing half marathons next summer.
Okay, Dan. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Boy, anyone help her out? Can anyone help her out? Going to go to the second and last break of the evening, and we'll be back right out the other side. Don't go away.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
Daryl Bauer is back, and my next guest is Zach Werner. Zach Werner was a former judge at Canadian Idol. He's moved. I think he's been here. Maybe he's been here a full year now. Could be. We'll find out. I got a chance to interview him several times. He is responsible for Sing NL, which has been a hugely successful talent show that's occurs every year, and I'm sure that's kicking off again. But tonight he has a brand new project. It is called Kids. It's basically, he's going to tell us. Let's let him tell us. But we're looking for the next Newfoundland boy band, and he is hunting for it right now. Zach's on the line. Zach, how are you?
How are you, sir?
I didn't want to mess with your name.
I've been here for a year and 3 months, and I want to say, I think you interviewed me the first week that I got here, and I'm forever grateful for the welcome that I got from you and for our friendship ever since I've been here, including judging the finals of Sing NL, which you did a marvelous job of.
Well, I mean, that being at that finals was a jaw-dropping experience when you get, there was a youth category and an adult category, and oh my gosh, the level of talent and the voices, it was a tough decision. But that's not what we're talking about tonight, although I'm sure we can talk about that again when it comes. Tell us about, it's Kids Rock.
Well, our new project is called Kids Rock with a Z in the middle, like we're trying to be super hip. You know, kids like the Z.
Absolutely.
Kids Rock, K-I-D-Z, Rock, N-L, Kids Rock, N-L. And it's not a boy band, although what you may have seen was we held auditions last week, and there are auditions again on February 25th at the Arts and Culture Center. But we are short on boys, so we had a wonderful turnout of young female talent. The age range is 8 to 14. And so we are definitely short on boys. So that's definitely what the outreach is right this minute, is to find some kids that are really pop fascinated and that want to sing and dance and entertain and play some instruments and go out and, you know, rock the streets, but with really modern pop. That's what the focus is going to be. Not that we won't throw some other things into the mix, a little country, a little traditional, a little this and that, because it is about entertaining people. But right now we are definitely short on boys. So Kids Rock, to make Kids Rock and L, to make a short, make it short and sweet, in the States there's a thing called Kids Bop out of Toronto, which KTEL has owned for forever. There's the Mini Pops. But living here, you know, I came to the realization that, first of all, Newfoundlanders love things that are of Newfoundland, and certainly the Mini Pops are not coming here on tour. And also that, you know, if you're a young person, if you're a parent, your kid wants to get involved in traditional music, there are innumerable outlets to do that. And if they want to get involved in kind of something in the middle, there's the Kiwanis world, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly there are massive opportunities to do musical theater. What there is not, at least in my estimation, is a lot of opportunity to make modern pop music, which, if we check the radio ratings, you know, the numbers, that's what kids are listening to. That's what a lot of people are involved with. And I just really think, you know, that there's a lot of kids who want to sing and dance, but they don't want to do a musical from 1950. They want to get out and do the stuff that they personally are listening to and personally love. So that's what Kids Rock is going to be, is a musical group, probably 10 to 15 members, that goes out and performs the hits and so, makes videos and.
And then you'll take this on the road?
Well, we're going to do a variety of things. First of all, social media is huge. So Roger Maunder, who you may know, is a wonderful award-winning filmmaker, is a partner in the overall. So we're really going to be shooting a lot of video and really filling the social media stream with the kids performing, you know, and making, you know, real videos, obviously, and getting to know them. We're also going to be making an album right away, and we'll probably make several albums over the course of the next couple of years. Greg Tobin is also a partner, and then who's a producer, and then Stephanie Moyse is our choreographer. Well, the idea is, of course, to go out and perform live. You know, we're hoping in the fall to do a tour, probably of the Arts and Culture Centers, but in the summertime, we're going to do a variety of things. We're shopping to festivals right now, and we're also going to just do straight-up barnstorming, you know, go and play by the splash pads at the various parks in the city and go to around Newfoundland and let our kids get out there with the, you know, we have the right equipment to do it, and go and just blow people away with them singing and dancing and playing the hits. We're definitely taking them on the road as much as we can.
It would sound like a win-win for any festival who would, you know, obviously are trying to appeal to families to come out to these events to have something at their festival this summer.
Well, that's exactly right, and thank you for noticing that. You know, the fact is that you know, you can have Bobo the Clown, and you can have some jugglers, and you can do a variety of things. But you know, kids are listening to the radio, and the kids are exposed to pop music. And I think, you know, if you want to draw that family crowd during the late afternoon or during the day and have something that really appeals, but is also enough cutting-edge pop, whether it's, you know, Demi Lovato or it's Ariana Grande music or it's the ex-ambassadors or the other things, you know, the cutting-edge pop that's on the radio, we're going to be bringing that too. We'll probably throw in some Bon Jovi or Journey for good luck and, you know, some other Newfoundland-oriented music. But I think we really offer an opportunity to bring that crowd to see something exciting. To be honest, I think George Street could use it in the George Street Festival. You know, how are we reaching out as a music business in Newfoundland towards the kids that are interested in what they're listening to and want to see it? And I think it's an issue. I mean, aside from Kids Rock, which I'm in love with, I think it's an issue that the whole live market is going to have to address over the next 10 years.
There is not a lot of opportunities for kids under the age of 19 to see any live music at all, and which is just really too bad when you think about it.
Well, there's finally a hip-hop show coming to St. John's, and it's Nelly, who hasn't had a hit in 25 years. Anyways.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're missing it somewhere here. But right now, you know, my joy is to afford kids an opportunity to do the music that they love, those that want to come and be a part, and to get out and entertain and get some good training along the way, right? There's nothing like being a part of a group and having the support and having professionals behind you to really move your abilities further forward for whatever you want to do.
Well, I mean, so these kids are lucky enough to get some singing instruction, obviously get some time in front of a camera, which is tremendously beneficial, and
right.
and some dance choreography as well. It sounds like a great idea. So when is the tell us about when the next audition is and how people
can
go.
Our next audition is February 25th. At the Arts and Culture Center in St. John's, in the Irwin's Courtroom, which is easy to find if you just come to the building. It starts at 9 a.m. It goes till 12:30. There are also instructions on what you need for that audition on our website. But the best thing right now is to just send me an email, which I get them all, to kidsrock, KIDZROCKNL, kidsrocknl, at gmail.com. And I will respond to everybody, and I'll forward you the links to our various websites and the information that's out there. You can also just search, if you spell it right, Kids Rock, then a space, NL. You can just search it online, and you'll find it easily.
It sounds pretty exciting.
It's pretty cool, and you know what? I had a good time seeing you play on Tuesday night at the Black Sheep. I just want to mention that, even though you didn't see me. And I'm playing there tomorrow night at 10:30 with my psychedelic rock band. So, you know, maybe you should come down and hang out for a bit.
I just might. Zach, this
it's
sounds
the
like...
It's the right era for us.
It is. I really like this project. Any opportunity and anyone who's trying to get kids involved in the music business... So it's anywhere born from age 8 years old to 14. That's the wheelhouse. Get your kids out, particularly your sons, because you might be right. There's a lot of great young singers out there. Maybe they just need to be that one little extra nudge to get there.
Well, we always had that on Idol, you know, that the girls came out in droves and the boys had to be brought out kicking and screaming, you know. And it's like, listen, there's kids out there that really want to entertain. I think, you know, they should come and be a part of this. It's going to be a really fun opportunity.
Great stuff. I'll send a tweet out about it. I'll tweet the address where people can reach you. Thanks for this, Zach. We'll talk again.
Thanks so much for all the support. I really appreciate it, Darryl.
You're in your second winter here. You're a lifer now. I mean, you're here.
Oh, dude, I'm going off to Trinidad with the Club One Presents in about 2 weeks. So I'm going to do the Newfoundland experience, but I'm going to do it in Trinidad. So I'm feeling very lucky.
You are. Enjoy yourself. Thanks for this, Zach.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's a great idea. Get your kids involved in some good, wholesome music and a good bit of fun. You know the Mini Pops. My God, they made a dynasty out of Mini Pops and kids' music. A lot of kids loved it. We are going to go to the news. Before I go, Colleen Power, I got a tweet from Chris. Colleen Power is out in Triton. I think she's there tonight. I think she's got a show tomorrow night. Go see Colleen Power in Triton. If you're in Triton itself or you're within a 100-kilometer radius, go see it. Patrick, what do you say we take as the news? Melissa Jenkins is going to give us the news. I'll see you out the other side. Don't go away. Lots of stuff coming up in the next hour.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is the VOCM Radio Network, 590 VOCM St. John's, 740 CHCM Marystown, 710 CKVO Clarenville, New Cap Incorporated, Steel Communications Radio Stations. Also available all the time from anywhere thanks to Radio Player Canada. Download the free app today. This is your VOCM. Local news now, a VOCM news update.
I'm Melissa Jenkins. A registered psychologist who assessed Ann Norris in prison says the accused is not a psychopath. VOCM's Renelle LeGros reports.
Dr. Randy Penny was asked by a colleague to conduct a psychiatric assessment of Ann Norris following her arrest for murder. He was to do this without interviewing any other medical professionals. Dr. Penny conducted 7 tests over 2 days with Norris at HMP. Penny found Norris was very oriented. She knew where she was and what she was doing. He says he found her to be upfront and truthful. Dr. Penny told the court that Norris showed symptoms of anxiety and says her trauma was very real to her, pointing to her delusions that she was going to be harmed or assaulted. He says he wouldn't confirm this a case of schizophrenia, but says his findings would support it. As for psychopathy, Dr. Penny says no, and Norris is not a psychopath. Renelle LeGros, VOCM, local news now.
The St. Anthony RCMP is reporting a theft from a St. Lunaire Griquet ambulance. Medication was taken sometime between noon on February 6th and the morning of February 7th. At this time, the details on the types of medication taken are not being released. Anyone with information regarding this incident is asked to contact the St. Anthony RCMP or Crime Stoppers.
Right?
And the Bay St. George RCMP are investigating a break-in at a home on the Port au Port Peninsula earlier this week. Police say a number of items were stolen from the home on Bungay's Lane in Lourdes, including a TV and VCR. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Bay St. George RCMP or Crime Stoppers. And a woman from Torbay is crediting a local support group for saving her life by helping her overcome her mental illness. Kelly Banks joined Channel just over a year ago after she decided to face her mental illness issues head on. Banks began attending peer support groups, which Channel holds every Tuesday and Thursday night. They are completely anonymous, and people are given the opportunity to speak about their mental health freely and openly. Banks says the biggest challenge for her was taking that first step and seeking help. But now she sees the benefits of talking about mental health openly.
I lived with it so long in denial and not anybody knowing, and coming to a breaking point where I had to face it and get help and get a proper diagnosis and medication. And this is my supports. This is my biggest support. The biggest thing with Channel is everyone in the room is in the same boat, so they all get it. And yes, people are making big strides and really, really find the place beneficial.
Your VOCM weather is coming up next.
VOCM weather is brought to you by Vogue Optical. Bring your prescription to Vogue Optical. Vogue Optical, where your second pair is free.
Now here's a look at your VOCM weather from PAL Airlines and Aerospace meteorologist Brian Walsh. For the Avalon Peninsula, rain tapering to showers or drizzle this evening, then changing to flurries late this evening. Wind chill near minus 12 overnight. For the Clarenville area, occasional showers ending this evening, then partly cloudy with occasional flurries and a low of minus 9. For the Buron Peninsula, mostly cloudy with occasional flurries and a low of minus 7. The rest of your forecast from Environment Canada. For central Newfoundland, cloudy and a low of minus 15. For the West Coast, Northern Peninsula and Port au Basque, flurries tonight and a minus 9. For the Happy Valley Goose Bay area, a few clouds tonight, low of minus 28, with the wind chill more like minus 39. And for Labrador West, there's an extreme cold warning in effect, with a low of minus 38, wind chill turning to minus 40 this evening, minus 50 overnight. For VOCM, I'm Melissa Jenkins.
This is Nightline on VOCM.
No tag. That means we're back. Daryl Power is back in the chair for the second hour. This is a caller who, if you remember her, you will definitely enjoy the chat. It's Stella Michelle, and she has, it's called 12 Months, 12 Miracles. And she's been updating Jonathan, and I had the luxury of speaking with her this evening. She's on line one. Hello, Stella. How are you?
Hey, Daryl, that's quite an introduction to live up to.
It's nice to get a chance. I've heard you speak to Jonathan before. It's nice to actually get a chance to talk to you. Tell us about 12 Months, 12 Miracles for the people who haven't heard of you before.
Well, it started off as a New Year's resolution of mine back in January 2016, and we just kicked off year three.
Year three already?
Yeah, hard to believe, isn't it?
You're into 36 months, 36 miracles.
No, we had 26, so this is year three that we're into right now.
You're into 26. Are you running out of ideas?
Not really, no, because I got enough people in the Facebook group there that'll keep pushing me and keep coming up with new stuff, and, you know, it's not too bad.
So, the 12 Months, 12 Miracles, it's for kids, is that correct?
It's for everybody.
Tell us some of the people you've helped.
We have four staple miracles, and they include the toy drive with the Corner Brook Regional Fire Department. We do that every year. We hit the food bank, the Bay of Islands Food Bank, every year, depending on what month comes available. So we hit those people every year. We go mummering. We went mummering for the first time in December 2017, and that one is definitely coming back this year. And we do Block the Bus campaign with the VOCM out here for backpacks, school supplies, and stuff.
Nice.
So those are four staple ones. So that only leaves me with 8 months to come up with new ideas. So not so bad.
So tell us about the most recent idea you have in the cooker.
Okay, so the most recent one that we just finished up is the February one. We sent three couples out to celebrate Valentine's Day.
Sweet.
So they're gone on like a dinner date night kind of deal. So, yeah, we sent three couples. We managed to come up with that much money to do three.
And it sounds so simple, but some people can't even afford to go out and enjoy a nice meal. So this is something that they're really going to enjoy to make their Valentine's special.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I mean, it's nice to celebrate love and to celebrate that feeling and just to celebrate today. And some couples, and I know my husband and I are guilty of this, we have kids, we're busy, you know, going out to dinner is a last priority because there might be a basketball tournament, there might be this, there might be that. But if you're given a gift certificate for a restaurant, you know you're going to use it, right? So guaranteed there's going to be a date night in their future.
Are you getting a lot of corporate support?
Sometimes there are businesses that'll jump on board and help us out, but for the most part, it's just local people and people in general. Like, I have a cousin of mine who I've never actually met face-to-face. She lives in Ontario. She's guaranteed every month, bang on, I'm getting an email money transfer from her.
That's sweet. If someone did want to help, before I let you go, how can they get a hold of you?
Facebook is the best place. Look up 12 Months, 12 Miracles, and you can join the group there. Get all the information on all the miracles that are coming up and what's on the go right now. I just wanted to add, the March Miracle, we already kicked off the March Miracle. I'm sure you've seen pictures and news stuff about the flooding that happened in Benoit's Cove here on the West Coast mm-hmm. back in January when we had all the weather. I mean, it was awful. There was houses, sheds, everything flooded and damage to properties. And if people didn't receive any damage or flooding, they're helping their neighbor, they're helping family and friends who are in that predicament, right? So I was approached by a parent of a grade 9 student down at St. Peter's Academy in Benoit's Cove, and the grade 9 class every year goes to Quebec to do a French trip. And she said that they're having a really difficult time, the kids are having a really difficult time trying to fundraise to come up with money to go on this trip because of the lack of money now. There's no extra in this community at all, right? So they're having a hard time. So she asked me if it was possible, could I possibly help out? And so I threw it out to the group members, and we all decided that, yeah, we're going to jump all over this. So I set a goal at $2,000 because the class has to come up with $10,000. So if we can come up with two, that only leaves them with eight, right? So I opened it up a couple of weeks ago, and so far we have $925 raised. So we're hoping to hit that $2,000 goal before the middle of March.
Beautiful.
Right? So if anybody would like to help out with that, I can do email money transfers. You can drop off money at my house, or I can come pick it up, whatever. If they'd like to help out, find me on Facebook, 12 Months, 12 Miracles.
Punch in 12 months, and it comes right up. Thanks for this, Stella. Congratulations to you for the wonderful work you're doing. It's what's started out as becoming maybe a 12-month project. It's something that's catching on, and you're into year three. I hope you get into year 33.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Daryl. Bye-bye.
A fantastic idea. You can find it on Facebook and see a lot of the things that they have done. And if you want to send her some email money transfer to help her get the projects going, March does sound interesting, does sound like a good one, help some kids get to St. Pierre. Please go ahead and do that. Next caller, I don't think I've ever spoken to him, but I'm looking forward to it. Jerry Burns on the line. We're going to talk about the Marine Atlantic surcharge. Mr. Byrne, how are you?
Beyond Daryl.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Daryl. I really, really appreciate it. I'm doing fine, thanks.
The Marine Atlantic surcharge, that's the death by a thousand cuts. Tell us about it.
Well, listen, this is an issue that really affects a lot of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, but in particular it affects the industries in my own ministerial portfolio of fisheries and aquaculture and agriculture and forestry. All of these industries, all of these businesses really depend on marine Atlantic, especially our fisheries and our aquaculture sectors. Each and every year, we pay in. Of course, we have experienced the fuel surcharge at marine Atlantic. This is over and above our regular fares that we have to pay at marine Atlantic, and it's a problem. Because I can tell you this, Daryl, and I'll just shoot from the hip right away to get the the juices flowing here. We have a fuel surcharge that just went from 15% charged against all of the regular fares that we pay. It just went up to 18% effective April 1st. Now, you could argue, a lot of your listeners, I would certainly argue, that given the price stability of fuel and oil, I'm questioning as to whether or not only why it went up to 18%, but why there's a fuel surcharge at all. Because, Daryl, Marine Atlantic, when they introduced the fuel surcharge in 2007, they created a formula, and they announced a formula and said that, basically they just explained it this way. They said, Marine Atlantic is a transportation company. We operate ferries. Ferries burn fuel. Fuel is a natural, normal expenditure cost for operating a ferry. But fuel costs are going up and up each and every year. So we've got to, in addition to the regular fuel price, the fuel costs that we have, that we absorb and we collect through our regular fares, we're going to have to account and be able to deal with the increasing cost of fuel through a fuel surcharge. And they did that back in 2007. And what they said is, we'll set a reference point of the annual fuel cost at Marine Atlantic in 2006 will be the reference point. And any time that the fuel costs go over and above that reference point, that which goes over and above will be able to recollect or, recoup through the fuel surcharge. And that amount, Daryl, was $23.5 million. So Marine Atlantic said to everyone, to us all, we're in the ferry business, ferries burn fuel, we understand that, we've built that into our normal price structure, and that normal cost is going to be about $23.5 million. Over and above that, there will be a fuel surcharge. Well, for the last year, if you compare that, if you actually take from the annual audited financial statements of Marine Atlantic, and you compare what they spent on fuel versus what the actual fuel surcharge amount that they collected on an annual basis, the numbers are very, very clear. Marine Atlantic overcharged $34.4 million over the last 10-year period. That's not a small amount of money.
No, it isn't. So I guess their argument is that they are changing fuel to cleaner fuel, and this is where the money needs to be recouped somehow. And as usual on all these things, it's recouped by people who are actually paying for the service.
Yeah, that's the first. Marine Atlantic, since I brought this forward, have contradicted their contradiction and their contradiction. So the first time, so when I challenged this, because what drew my attention to all of this is that I looked at the audited financial statements from last year, and I noticed that the fuel costs at Marine Atlantic last year were $19.5 million. Well below the $23.5 million reference point. Do you know how much money they collected in the fuel surcharge last year? Over $10 million. So if you were actually to apply the formula, the lowest cost for fuel in the last 15-year history of Marine Atlantic was last year. So it really drew the question, so what is it exactly they're doing? So The first thing that Marine Atlantic came forward with when I challenged them is they said, we've got the International Maritime Organization's sulfur emissions reduction regulations, which we have to deal with. And you know what? And we all understand that when there's an environmental regulation that sort of causes or requires an increased quality of fuel to be burnt in our ships, well, that costs money. And I said to myself, well, that's an intuitive argument. I can hear that. I can see that. And then I started to look back through the numbers, Daryl. And then I realized that last year, the fuel numbers, the costs, expenditures of Marine Atlantic were the lowest they were in 15 years.
So how did they explain that?
And then I realized that those fuel regulations that they talk about was driving up costs, which there's no evidence this is actually driving up costs, because the fuel costs are actually the lowest in its 15-year history. They don't even come into effect until 2020. So how are you actually incurring costs for regulations that don't exist, first off? And second off, if your actual fuel costs are never been lower than what they are today, how do you actually justify collecting over $10 million in a fuel surcharge?
So what's been their response to the these points that you're bringing up?
So when I caught them, they said, oh, no, Jerry Byrne doesn't have this right. See, we actually changed the fuel surcharge formula in 2010. And so we didn't tell anyone that we did that, but see, it's all in these documents. So I went into the documents, Daryl, because I got them all. And I actually found out it spells there in black and white. In 2010, the corporate plan summary, which is a summary of the Treasury Board submission, which Marine Atlantic must produce and is available because it's tabled in Parliament, the Treasury Board, the corporate plan summary for 2010-2014 actually spells it out that there was no change in the fuel surcharge. So then when I actually brought that forward, they said, the spokesperson came forward and said, oh, yeah, well, it was actually 2011 when we changed it. And so then I went to the 2011 document, and it doesn't say anywhere where it actually changed to the 2011 document. What it says is they went to a fuel hedging program. Now, a fuel hedging program is what Via Rail does. Via Rail actually hedges the fuel, and all that simply is it's they buy fuel on a futures basis, on a contractual price, so that it protects the corporation from real big spikes in cost of fuel, but it also kind of, it's dangerous a little bit, because if fuel price goes down, you're buying it at a predetermined price, you're protecting yourself from price spikes, but you also have to bear a consequence if you actually buy it at a higher price than what the actual market demands. Now, Daryl, the interesting thing about all of this is that fuel hedging is not a formula for a surcharge and cannot be implied to the reader of any of those documents. Shouldn't say, oh, they're going to a fuel hedging program, so therefore, then the fuel surcharge has now changed. Via Rail uses fuel hedging. Via Rail doesn't actually have a fuel surcharge.
It's right under Marine Atlantic website.
Draw one to the other.
Yeah, right under website. It's talking about this fuel. That's what it says. It says they're using a fuel hedging program. But it seems to be a hedging program that's still continuously costing more money every year as opposed to putting money back. And there's never been a situation where the fuel surcharge has been lessened because they've collected more money than they needed.
Bingo. And in fact, last year, the actual cost of fuel, which, Daryl, that's the only thing that matters. It's not how much fuel you burn. It should not be based on that one single variable, because if you just simply base it on the amount of fuel you burn, well, you got to calculate into that what was the cost of that fuel when you bought it. And it should be cost of fuel times consumption of fuel. And that leads to cost of annual cost fuel costs at the end of the year. So last year was the lowest price cost for fuel incurred by Marine Atlantic in a 15-year period, yet they collected over $10 million in a fuel surcharge. And they're now suggesting, so it's the contradiction of the contradiction of the contradiction, because first they said it was because of an environmental regulation, and when I sort of, put that in its place, then they went and said, well, we changed the rules in 2010. We didn't tell anyone we changed the rules in 2010, but we did, so that's why the numbers, Jerry Byrne hasn't got the right numbers. And then I went and said, well, according to your own documents, you didn't change the rules in 2010. Then Marine Atlantic came back and said, oh, yeah, it wasn't 2010, it was actually 2011. And then I went back to the documents for 2011, and nowhere does it actually say that they changed the rules in 2011. The only thing it does say, the only new piece of information, is they went to a fuel hedging program. Daryl, Marine Atlantic has done a lot of work to save money on fuel. They used to operate, have 2,200 crossings, single crossings a year. Back in 2008, 2009, there was about 2,200 single crossings a year. Today, there's about 1,600 to 1,700 crossings a year. They've substantially reduced the number of crossings. What does that do? Lowers the amount of fuel that they burn. Doesn't change the cost of fuel, that they the price that they purchase it, but it certainly lowers the amount of fuel that they burn. Second thing they've done is instead of running the engines while they're at port in Port of Basque and North Sydney, they actually turn the engines off and they actually hook up to a shore-based power system instead for their electricity needs. That reduces the amount of fuel that they burn. So there's a real, real good reason why Marine Atlantic's fuel consumption is much, much lower. There's a real, real good reason why you'd go to a fuel hedging program, because it, over the long term, it's been proven to lower your overall costs. But that's not the issue here. What's at issue here is a single solitary fact. What is the annual cost of fuel at Marine Atlantic? How much money do they take in on a fuel surcharge? And what's the difference here versus a reference point? And the reference point that they chose some time ago was 2006. So in other words, there's an appearance here, a clear appearance, that they're using the fuel surcharge as a general revenue item for Marine Atlantic, as opposed to offsetting fuel costs, inflated or increasing fuel costs. Daryl, there's only one answer here. There's only one answer. And it goes back to, you know, we've had a situation where there's been some price fixing on bread. And the Competition Bureau actually analyzed, you know, what companies' behaviors were. And the Competition Bureau actually rendered a decision that said there's price fixing in bread. It does happen. There's things, you know what, things go awry. All I'm asking for in this particular situation, if a federal crown corporation is going to advertise that they've got a fuel surcharge and the fuel surcharge is to offset increasing fuel costs, when the evidence comes forward that fuel costs have never been lower than what they were last year at $19.5 million, lowest ever in the last 15 years, and yet they collected over $10 million in a fuel surcharge, somebody should come in with an investigation to find out what the truth is, especially since the corporation itself has changed its own communication strategy three times in the last week.
The most expensive piece of the TransCanada. Jerry, thanks for telling us about this, and thanks for reading some of those financial statements and pointing this out. It's a very interesting point. Appreciate this call.
Daryl, more to come.
Thanks a lot.
Much,
okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's great. I've heard Jerry talk about that before. Great call. Looking at the numbers. Holding Marine Atlantic's feet to the fire. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, there's a great little craft business idea. I'm going to talk to Heather Mullally. Don't go away. Back in a flash.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
You're listening to VOCM's Nightline. VOCM's Nightline is brought to you by Cowan's Optical. Cowan's Optical, where the focus is on you.
We're back. Heather Mullally has a new little craft business. It's called Newfound Love. She is knitting some wonderful selection of hats, which can be used for little babies and can be used for teddy bears. I love crafting ideas. I love small business ideas. I thought I'd reach out to her and say hello. Heather, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. How long has this business been going?
Well, officially not very long at all, but I've been doing various art projects and crafting type things for many, many years.
You're very good.
Thank you.
Because
I really appreciate that.
I'm just looking at the pictures of some of the hats, and there's obviously a lot of vibrant colors and even some pretty little flowers and little flower work, which is added a little extra. How long does it take you to create one of these hats?
Usually I can do about one a day.
Are you knitting now? Tell the truth.
Not right this moment, no. I actually went and put it down so I could concentrate. But on a normal night, yes, you would absolutely catch me knitting right now.
It's therapeutic for people who do it. Would you find that?
Very much so. I had quite a few problems, sort of court things and stuff like that many years ago. And one of the things that I found the most helpful in getting through all that time was being creative. And I started doing things I just never thought I could do. I started drawing and knitting and crocheting and just doing all sorts of things. And I've really kept it up because it's kept me probably healthier than anything else ever did.
Isn't that wonderful? So these hats, are they really going worldwide?
Yes, they are, actually. They are.
How are people finding out about you?
Well, I've been really lucky as to travel a lot through my life, and I know people in a lot of different places, so that certainly helps. And then it all kind of started because I had several friends over the years come and visit, and when you'd go to different souvenir shops and such, we'd find a lot of the things that were there were made in China. You know, they said Newfoundland, but they weren't really from Newfoundland. And I just thought, like, that's insane with the talent we have on this island, that people are going home with something made in China instead of going home with things that are made here. And so my card, actually, I have the Republic of Newfoundland flag attached to every item. So people really like that because they know they're getting something that was truly made here.
It's a nice brand, a nice name, Newfound Love.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how I came up with that, but it worked out really well.
It rolls off the tongue.
It did, yeah. And it's, you know, and I think it really helps people remember it, too, because so many people come here, and what they always say is how much they love it. So, you know, going with Newfound Love is really not much of a stretch, right?
Some of the, and the little blankets for beers are great. So people can go on your Facebook page called Newfound Love, all one word,
yep.
And that's probably the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, it is. Newfound Love NL, actually. I had to go there. And they can also reach me, newfoundlovenl@gmail.com, if they just prefer to go through email.
Some beautiful colors, beautiful designs, really cute hats. Makes me want to have another baby.
Oh, my. Well, not me personally, but grandchildren would be okay.
Listen, Heather.
The thing has just, I've just always been a person I like. Funky. I like fun. I like doing things that are unique that I've never seen anywhere else. So, you know, I do a lot of things like rainbows and unicorns and dragons and things like that, you know. And then, of course, I do try to have quite a few things that actually have the Republic of Newfoundland colors in them and such. That's also popular. But I'm better at crazy than I am at simple.
It's really a lovely idea. People should definitely go on the website and have a little look. Heather Mullally, thanks for this.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, some really cute hats. I mean, really cute hats. I'm not a knitter. My sister was, and she was really good. Next guest is Nick Whalen is on the line. Looking forward to talking to him. Mr. Whalen, how are you this evening?
Mr. Power, how are things? Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad to have you on. We are going to talk a little bit about immigration this evening. I know there was a meeting here in St. John's last night, but there's a story in the news this week saying that how... That's a pretty loud announcer.
Yeah, sorry, I'm at the... maybe what I'll do is I'll mute and then I'll speak because I'm at the airport here in Ottawa.
Okay, tell me about the fact that it looks like a lot of people are being accepted as immigrants in Atlantic Canada, more so than the rest of the province. Did you catch that news story in the news over the last few days?
Oh, sorry, Darrell. I hadn't seen that the other Atlantic provinces or the Maritime provinces were doing better than Newfoundland at this, but I'm a little bit not surprised. We did a study into immigration into Atlantic Canada at the... House of Commons Standing Committee on Citizenship and Immigration last year. I was part of that study and finishing the report. I presented it in the House in November. And in Citizenship and Immigration Canada, it's actually developed a pilot program that's meant to remove the requirement for LMIAs, that's labor market impact assessments, when companies want to hire immigrants to come work in Atlantic Canadian provinces and set quite a large cap on the number of people that could be brought into the provinces through that. But Newfoundland has not taken full advantage of that the way New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and PEI have.
And why haven't we?
Well, I think, you know, the one important aspect is the labor market. I mean, we need to have the labor market demand in order to get the jobs into the province and encourage immigrants to come. It's a bit of a chicken and egg. You need a population base to support industry, but you also need jobs to encourage people to come. And over the past couple of years, there's been a bit of a slowdown in Newfoundland and Labrador. But also, the province of Newfoundland and Labrador has been working on their own immigration strategy. And I know Minister Hawkins had a roundtable on that yesterday. It's a strategy they're about to launch, and hopefully will take full advantage of the federal programs that are available to them. But it's sort of, you know, it misses the last year of the program that we had already announced in 2016.
Are these mainly skilled labor, particularly skilled labor jobs?
Well, they're meant to be high-skilled and, as well, intermediate-skilled jobs. And the labor market demand is meant to take it out of the hands of government, that determination, put it in the hands of companies that want to do the hiring. The difference in the Atlantic Immigration Pilot Project versus the Provincial Nominee Program is that the focus is really on making sure that when new people come to the country, they're provided with the appropriate settlement services so that they appropriately integrate into Canadian society, that they feel welcome, that they have a good experience in their first year in the country, rather than and then allowing, you know, that to be the focus of the immigration and not have the government worry about whether or not there's a labor market need. Business is better able to determine whether or not there's a labor market need. And so that's what the immigration pilot is about. The province really hasn't designated a large number of employers yet under that project. And so that's probably why there's a bit of a lag.
Yeah, I've had Jose Rivera from the Refugee Immigrant Advisory Council. That's one thing that we do very well, and that is how we help new immigrants to the province adjust to Newfoundland society, everything from what to dress, maybe some English second language skills, help with the job market, help with some paperwork. What else can we do? Because what's happening, I guess, is like people say, okay, I want to immigrate to Canada, and they immediately gravitate to the Montreals, Torontos, and Vancouvers, because let's face it, that's where they may know of friends, family, and relatives who are already there.
Well, certainly when we're talking about immigration, we're talking a lot about family reunification, and communities are going to coalesce around the same large centers the same way Canadians do. And so when we try to look at immigration to the more rural areas of the country, we need to take that into account and just allow more immigration into those areas to happen, with the understanding that there's going to be a natural migration as people become Canadian citizens towards the larger centers. We shouldn't expect immigrants to be more, likely to remain in a rural lifestyle than regular and existing Canadians are. And so one of the recommendations that came out of our report is to take that into account when we do our national levels plans. If we only expect 50% of newcomers to remain in rural communities after they come to Canada, then maybe we need to double the numbers that go to rural communities so that they can maintain the same quality and standard of living that the rest of the country enjoys.
And there's a real sell to the fact that it's a different pace of life, maybe a better, it's a nice transition, and there's the services and supports are here to help people get situated, settled away, and raise families and start a new life.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's the sell that we've got to make the newcomers, that Newfoundland will provide them a better first experience when they come to the country. And of course, if oil and gas prices are high, we'll have a lot of people wanting to stay. If we focus on innovative industries and provide opportunities for people to work in high-tech jobs like companies like Verafin, or the aerospace sector with companies like PAL, or in a very interesting oceans tech sector with companies like eDNA Tech and other companies that are coming out of the Genesis Center. We need more of that. We need interesting reasons for people to stay and live and raise their families in Newfoundland with interesting work. And we've got to focus on our niches. And one of those niches is the ocean sector. I know there's an announcement that'll be coming around soon with respect to superclusters for Canada. I'm very hopeful that Newfoundland and Labrador, Nova Scotia, and their bid with the ocean supercluster being proposed by Petroleum Research Newfoundland and Labrador is successful, because that will drive a huge amount of interest in research and funding for research in those sectors within Atlantic Canada. I think it'll be great, and it'll drive immigration, because in order to do that type of research, you need the best of the world. And so we'll be encouraging those people to come.
Well, we'll keep their eyes on it. So with regards to the funding opportunities, if someone was so inclined, where would they be able to find some more information on it?
On the Ocean Supercluster, well, hopefully there'll be an announcement next week. I would expect we'll find out whether or not we've been successful sometime towards the end of next week.
You are at the airport. I'll let you grab a small coffee, because it's a little late for a large coffee, and catch your plane.
Thank you. I'll land at around 3:30 in the morning. I'm away for 96 hours every week. I leave my house at 4 in the morning, get home at 4 in the morning. So I'm looking forward to being home in a few hours. And thanks for your time, Daryl.
A large coffee. You go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Nice talking to you, Nick. Bye-bye. So that is great. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we got two more callers in the queue. Looking forward to both of these calls. I see them coming up. Oh, yeah. We are cooking with gas. Patrick, right till the end. See you out the other side.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
I've often said the world needs more powers. The world needs more powers like this next gentleman. It's Paul David Power. He has a brand new play, something that's very near and dear to his heart, playing at the LSPO Hall this weekend. It's already begun. I think I'm catching him at the LSPO Hall now. We're going to talk about the play that everyone seems to be talking about. It's called Crippled. Paul David Power is on the line. Paul, how are you?
Hey, Daryl, how you doing? Right, more powers, yep.
We need more, and we're all trouble, but we still need more of us.
That's right.
are you at the LSPU now?
I am. We just finished, I just walked off the stage, actually, and I wanted to give you guys a call, and we just finished our second performance of Crippled.
Thanks, I've seen a lot of reviews of people who have seen it, and the reports, by all accounts, that you have created a really beautiful piece of work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we opened last night, so we had a great collection of people last night, and the feedback has been great about, you know, the major themes of the play, which is Paul Power, the actor, for those who don't know me, I use leg braces and crutches to get around, as does the character in the play that I perform on stage. So it's a lot to do with that physical identity for myself, as well as the play has themes about grief and loss. It's basically about my own life, and I had a partner who passed away suddenly 9 years ago. So it's those true stories. And last night was just wonderful, with many people talking about how they connected to either of those themes or both of them, which was, you know, really touching for me as the playwright.
It's a real disturbing word, crippled. It's one that's sort of fallen out of a common usage, but still lingers here in Newfoundland probably a lot longer than it should.
Yeah, and I've gotten a couple of notes about people who don't like the title of the play, and fear enough. You know, I, if you come and see the play and hear what the context of that word is, I'd welcome you to do so. But it stems from, like I said, it's my experience growing up with a disability. And you're right. When I grew up in like the late 70s, early 80s, that was still being used, the term crippled. And I remember, you know, starting school when I was in, you know, kindergarten, grade one, and you know, friends would ask you, and you know, I learned that word. Oh, I'm crippled. I don't think it was till, you know, the mid 80s that became sort of not a acceptable term. So I use the term, I guess, to get attention, to get people talking about it like we are right now, but also you know, it also goes into we can all be crippled at some point in our lives, like emotionally or mentally, that sort of thing. And I think the title is puts a spotlight on it and sort of takes the name back, or at least it does for me. You know, I always say I'm, and along with my play, I'm only an expert on my own disability, not others, and that reflects my experience of that term crippled that has stuck with me, even though the term is no longer acceptable. It's part of my childhood and how I was described, which feeds into, I guess, a lot of your insecurities or feeling different when you were a kid.
It's become a much more acceptable word now, as you pointed out, talking about like being emotionally crippled. Tell me about, I know that you're working with two of my favorite Newfoundlanders. Daniel Irvine is directing, and you also mm-hmm. got some playwriting help from Robert Chafe. What's it been like to work with those two powerhouses?
Oh, amazing. You're right, they are powerhouses. I've known them for years, just as friends and also as colleagues. And Robert Chafe actually is what we call a dramaturgy for the play, which is basically an editor, you know, gives you feedback and everything. So he's been working with me on this for a couple of years. So that has been like, I've really, really enjoyed the, what you call like the artistic process of writing it. And because I enjoyed it so much, I'm working with Robert, and he's been so supportive and pushing me as a writer. I wasn't in a rush to have this produced, you know. I was just enjoying the whole creative side of it, and then when it came to like staging it finally, you know, I couldn't ask for a better director. Daniel Irvine, who's like an award-winning director, you know, nationally, internationally known, and it's been thrilling to have her directing my play. And she helped me discover things in the script as an actor that I didn't even know was there as the writer. You know, she got me thinking more and more about the ideas and the color behind the language. And, you know, that's real talent to work with the playwright. And I've been turning around to her and saying, oh, I didn't think of it that way. But, you know, so just kudos to both of them. They've been like really, really supportive. I wouldn't be here tonight talking to you from doing a show if it wasn't for the both of them.
Was it difficult to write something so personal? Like, to, you know, it's easier to try to get inside of someone else's head rather than peek inside your own.
Yeah, it was challenging, you know. It's something I felt, you know, when my partner passed away, I found myself creating a lot just to get, you know, emotions out. You know, a lot of journaling and poetry writing and you know, video making, all that stuff, and it just felt like, you know, I needed to express that grief, or needed to express what I was feeling, and you know, I've written a couple of plays before, and it sort of just stemmed from that. As I think I'll try to write a play on this, which was challenging, was cathartic, and when I first started writing, I wasn't sure if I would ever, you know, actually have it on stage, but it just grew from there. And I mean, the challenge of it was, it is personal. There's some monologues and everything in there about losing my partner and growing up with a disability, and you know, writing that and having an editor or a dramaturge like Robert Chafe, you know, keeping me on track is the most challenging thing. Was, you know, I had a deadline, but you know, I don't feel like getting all the press today, you know, writing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of pushing myself to, well, you have to, and learning, you know, as a writer, you have deadlines, and just like all of us at a job, you know, you have to do it when it's due. And but that was challenging, because sometimes you just don't feel like going to that side of your feelings and that. And it was really challenging.
Your production company is looking to reach out and give other people opportunities, whether who experience other disabilities. I'm really excited about this play, and I'm looking forward to try and catch it on one of these nights. It's at the LSPO Hall. The two more shows left, Friday and Saturday. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we got two shows on Saturday, a matinee and an evening one. Yeah.
So the matinee left. Too.
Yeah, that's pay what you can, actually. So anybody, you know, who $5, you can come to your play. We want to have everybody here. So if you can't afford, we all have pay what you can on Saturday at 2:00.
Paul, listen, it's great to talk to you. I hope to get to meet you someday. Long live the powers, and congratulations on your new baby.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've heard a lot about that play, people. Go see it. Go see any play. There's so much. Now, last caller tonight. I've saved the best for last. There's a conference this weekend. It's called Partners for a Better World. It's a youth conference. It's going to be on at Waterford Valley High. And I am delighted to announce and introduce one of my favorite Newfoundlanders, the young humanitarian, the powerhouse in her own right, Catherine Dibben. She's on the line. Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Daryl?
You know, 16-year-old people could be just home Snapchatting. you know, from one end of the day to the next, sending meaningless pictures of their feet or something like this. You seem to have really become involved in a lot of projects. I've spoken to you on several occasions. You're always involved in something new and interesting. Tell us about what Partners for a Better World is.
Yes, so we're going to be having our youth conference here. So it's through, this week is International Development Week. So as part of that, we're hosting a youth conference this Saturday at Waterford Valley High from 9 to 12. And then we'll have some lunch afterwards and be able to network. We have a lot of great speakers coming in. I'm doing it through, I was appointed as the Newfoundland Ambassador for Act for Global Change, which is run through the Atlantic Council for International Cooperation. So we're just kind of educating the youth in Newfoundland about international development and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So this is something I've been tasked with and have like thoroughly enjoyed doing, and I'm really excited for Saturday.
What is a young girl from St. John's sudden or interested in the plight of other people on this planet far, far away from here?
There's so much to be done, Daryl. There's you think about how lucky you are here, and then you hear stories about people halfway across the world. And I've just always been taught that if you're fortunate enough to live a blessed life like we are, then it's important to give back and to educate others on matters going on in this world. So I think that's kind of where that comes from.
How did you become the ambassador for the ACT for Global Change?
It was an application process. So back in November, I applied, and then early December, I was flying to Halifax for training.
When are you planning on your run for the premier? Is that sooner or later? What's your date? Right.
Soon for that.
but you're ruling. You're totally as a grade 11 student. You're ruling out 2019. But that's all. You can't go any further. You're not going to say anything else. It must be exciting to put something together like this. You got a couple of speakers, Ryan Murphy and Patrick Handrigan, lined up Saturday morning, 9 o'clock to what time does it finish?
To 12, and then we're having lunch afterwards.
What's for lunch?
Oh, we got lots of catering coming from Coffee Matters. We got, it's good food now, good free food and a free event, so make sure you stop by.
It is a free event, is it?
It is, yes. You got to register. So look it up on Facebook, Partners for a Better World Youth Conference, and registration. And we got six different speakers coming in, a panel on refugee issues called It Takes a Village. And then we got two speakers and a wicked panel put together. And I'm really excited, and I hope to see some more people there.
It's a great idea. Congratulations on all the work that you are doing as only a grade 11 student, because you're also involved. There's a great... Before I let you go, there's a social justice group at Waterford Valley High, isn't there?
There is, yes. I'm also involved with that in the mental health committee and the student government.
I remember hearing about that and knowing that you were involved when Halloween, I think I was actually doing the show close to Halloween, or maybe it was Halloween last year, just after, and while other kids were out collecting candy, you guys were out collecting food for food banks.
Yes, we were. That is one of our annual events. This year we were able to raise over 2,000 pounds of food for our local food bank.
Congratulations on all that you've done in 16 short years. There's going to be lots of great more things to come from Catherine Dibben. That is for certain. This Saturday, Waterford Valley, 9 to 12:30. It's a youth conference, so I guess it's kids, people up to 18. Is that what you're looking for?
We got mostly high school students and some university students, but I'm not turning you away. If you got an interest, you come on down.
Thanks for this, Catherine. You got the last word of the night.
All right. Thanks, Daryl. Have a good night.
I will send people to Partners for a Better World. They can find it on Facebook. And I wish you all the best, Catherine. We'll talk again soon, no doubt. With the way you have projects on the go, I'm sure we'll talk again.
All right. Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, is the future of this province, and that is the close of this show. I've had a ball here again tonight. Jonathan is, I don't know if he's still got the smoked meat going, but if he does, head down to the Wedgwood Cafe and get a little bit of smoked meat, Sammy, on the go. I know I usually got an extra, but I don't have time tonight. I'm going out on behalf of myself, Daryl Power, producer extraordinaire on the other side of the glass, Patrick Myler. Thanks for listening tonight. Ah, love this chair. Daly's in the morning running the show, and he runs a bloody great show. You can't miss Open Line. I'll see you again sooner rather than later, I hope. Until then, God guard thee, Newfoundland.